Hey, welcome to episode 125 of Tangible Takeaways. I'm Jackson, and today I'm going to ask the question, how do I know when to confront somebody versus when to go deal with it, just me and God? I'm also here today with Pastor Todd.
Yeah, and I'm Todd, and I'm going to talk today about the value of warning lights on the dashboard of my life.
All that and more on this episode of Tangible Takeaways. Hey, welcome to Tangible Takeaways, episode 125. I'm here with Pastor Todd today.
125, wow, that's a cool number.
It is a cool number.
Yeah.
Is it a prime number? I believe last time you were on,
you
caught me off guard with a prime number.
Yeah, I was like really weird about that, but not even close, because you can divide it by 5, 25, all kinds of cool
things. So many things you could divide it by. You're just big prime number guy, so you know.
You're like, what was that about?
I'll just try to only get you on prime number episodes from now on, you know.
127, so, two more.
Two more, I'll bring you back. We're talking about this weekend's message, which was just a powerful parable on forgiveness. A very, I don't think it's a hard parable to understand the meaning of. Ooh. Some of them are shrouded. Even the one that we'll talk about this weekend is kind of like, if you didn't have Jesus's explanation with the parable of the sower, which we'll talk about this weekend, you'd be kind of like,
what's the point of that?
Yeah, I don't know what he's talking about. This is like very straightforward, right? Guy's forgiven a amount of money he could never pay back, and then goes and is absolutely ruthless to somebody who owes him a much, much smaller amount of money. And is completely unforgiving. Anybody would look at that and be like, that's crazy. Yeah. Like, that doesn't make any sense. But then you can also, in light of the gospel, easily see, wow, I've been forgiven a debt that I could never repay. And how crazy for me to try to demand punitive justice from other people when punitive justice isn't what I've received, you know. So it's just that kind of like very,
you find yourself in the story pretty quick.
Yeah,
like it didn't take much to say, who do you think you are in this story?
Yeah.
And you're right, under the gospel everybody is the first servant. Like, that's what's powerful about it, is that though our tendency would go, but wait a second, you don't know what's been done to me.
Yeah.
And I would go, let's pause. I get that concern, but in light of the objective truth of being a sinner whose debt has been paid at the cross that you don't have to pay yourself, that there's, it's just this equal playing field now. We all are the first servant.
Yeah. Yeah. You're all kind of left with no real right, I guess, to demand justice when you've received mercy and so much mercy, right? Like that's what sets it in comparison. And I think with that issue of forgiveness, like you said, it's just interesting. Every time we talk forgiveness, there's always a, I get it. I get that in general, I should forgive. In general, people should forgive. I like it when people forgive me for my wrongs. Mm. But this is a very particular circumstance. It's very unique. It's been going on for a long time. This person's never said sorry. They never will. There's always all the nuances, right? All the reasons as to why this situation is different. And this situation really is a good reason to cut somebody out of my life and not forgive them, right? Like, that just seems to be where we all go. Like, I'm not wagging a finger at anybody.
No.
That just seems to be where we all kind of instantaneously go is, but this one's different.
Yeah.
Why do you think we get that way with forgiveness? Like, why do we go so quickly to the extenuating circumstances or try to kind of excuse our lack of forgiveness?
Well, and I think it goes back to just kind of the silly thing at the beginning of the service was, when I'm driving and I get cut off, I experience it's a small, it's a nothing thing compared to everything else people go through, but I experience all the feelings. I experience the frustration. I experience even the fear, like I almost got in an accident, all that. The other person is experiencing next to none of that, most likely. And that's what's going on both directions. Because remember, I'm the guy who pulls out in front of people too.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, without sin in that area. And so I think that's the challenge, is that often part of the issue is they seem to be scot-free on what's happened. I bear all the wound. they've incurred this debt against me, they seem to be fine. And no problem and no repercussions, no consequences, fill in the blank. And so I think that that's one of the reasons as we feel it all and don't, and often I think it's true, they don't seem to feel much of anything. And that just seems so inequitable.
Yeah. Like,
and I was processing, I've told this story in our teaching team meeting. What's fascinating is at the very end, that quote from What's So Amazing About Grace, the only thing harder than forgiveness is the alternative. And the idea is that not only because that's code for because you're going to become bitter, but think about this for a minute. What if you were to go around exacting what everyone owes you? Like, what would you do even in the driving scenario? You'd have to pull up alongside. Now you're like, now road rage, right? But you're like, pull over. You get them to somehow pull over, and then you're going to give them a tongue lashing. How dare you? And then would it really make you feel better that they at least knew what they did to you? And then you start walking through every relationship and like not there's no even desire for forgiveness. It's exacting payment. You owe me this. You owe me that. And I just think, number one, for many people, that'd be a full-time job. They have great injury that people have had and suffered. And I just don't mean, and physically, I mean, the reality is you could probably never even do it. There are people who've hurt you that have passed away or so far removed you wouldn't even know where they live. But I mean, it just is actually helpful to me to process. I couldn't live in the space of exacting punishment, exacting payment, let's say it that way, from everyone who owes me. So you almost kind of come into some realities of, so what do I do then?
Yeah.
And that's what I think is powerful about the concept of forgiveness, is that it really is in every way the best way to live. And even if it just selfishly, how I'm going to get through the day is going to help me because I was able to not just trying to keep exacting payment from everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting how we are so quick to, especially in our pain, I think mostly in our pain when somebody has wronged us, we're so quick to say, man, the simple fix for all of this, all of the pain I experience, is just punitive justice. Like, every bad deed should be punished. And just like what you're saying, you start to play that out and it's like, that doesn't really work. Like that, like, it seems on the surface in the heat of the moment and in all those emotions, it seems like, well, that duh, like, just everybody that does bad things should get bad things, like just cosmic karma, right? Like, that's kind of what we're all in the heat of that moment wanting, is like, well, you should get yours because you hurt me.
Well, and that's what's fair.
Fair, right?
The story that I didn't tell, what that I alluded to but didn't share, I'm doing youth ministry for a season in Europe of all places, and we're getting off this bus and these kids that I don't really know that well, we're only there for a month just doing a short-term thing, and we get off the bus and apparently what had happened was, as one girl was getting out of her chair, her elbow smacked another girl in the back of the head, totally not on purpose, accidental, but nonetheless smacked her in the head. So as I'm at the front of the bus, I hear this scurry in the back and I'm like, those are my kids. What's going on? We get them to kind of break it up. And as we get off the bus, I asked the girl who was going off on the other girl, what happened? She's like, well, she hit me. And the other girl's saying, not on purpose. And I said, I was sorry. She's like, I don't care. I get to hit you back. And it was one of those powerful moments, cause she was dead serious.
Yeah.
Like, you hit me.
That's how it works.
I hit you.
Yeah.
And we'll be square. I don't even know if she would have felt that way, but I was like, what a fascinating worldview that's how she was just going to exact payment.
Yeah.
I can't forgive you. That's just what you deserve now. And I just thought, wow, there are times that I have felt that way. It's just powerful to see it in somebody else's life.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't believe you.
When I'm not the one who's hurt, it's like, well, that's just stupid.
You just think that's what you should do. Like, oh, wait a second.
Yeah, so. I feel the exact same way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because it is that punitive justice is just a drastic oversimplification, right? And it's kind of, it's interesting because I think we can kind of, anytime that you're not in charge, you have the opportunity to kind of armchair quarterback a situation. Mm-hmm. So we all armchair quarterback God. And we think when we're hurt or when something doesn't go our way or we're hurt by another, we just kind of shake our fist at him. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You're supposed to enact justice here. Everybody says you're just. This isn't very just that you're letting them get away with this when they hurt me.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the fist starts shaking. And it's like, man, the world is not that simple that punitive justice just fixes everything. But that is what we go to like first and immediately. And I think when we don't get it, which it's very rare that you do. I think if you do, just like you're saying, you're actually not going to feel better like you think you're going to.
Yeah.
But most of the time we just don't get it, yeah. Right? And as we don't get that punitive justice, all of a sudden the bitterness and the resentment starts to grow within us. But I don't know that I've met many bitter people that are aware that they're bitter. So mm-hmm. How, if I was bitter,
mm-hmm.
How would I realize that I was bitter? Or, yeah. You know, I've been wronged. I didn't get what I thought I deserved, or the other person didn't get what they deserved. Now I'm starting to kind of well up with bitterness. What are some indicators that would be like, whoa, we're getting pretty bitter here. Let's call time out.
Yeah. And I would say, I said this at the beginning of most of the services, I am someone who has definitely struggled forgiving people and had seasons of bitterness, as well as seeing God really miraculously take that away from me, not in every situation, but in probably the most severe. And I'm so grateful for that. So I can actually say, as a practitioner, so I'm not talking theory, and I've shared this with many people over the years out of my own experience, I would say the litmus test that I use most often to recognize, and I've had to ask the question numerous seasons in my life, am I bitter over this, is this simple indicator. When I don't have anything I need to be thinking about, right? When I'm at my desk working on something, when I'm reading a book, when I'm in a conversation, I'm engaged. But when my brain just could be about anything,
yeah,
standing in the shower, out pulling weeds, fill in the blank, where does my mind drift? If my mind drifts to that person, how they hurt me, I replay the scenario, what they did, I think what they deserve, that's the test.
Yeah.
And I will say, for at least very clearly two seasons of bitterness in my life, that was exactly what would happen. It wasn't the only indicator, but it was the most obvious one. And then the good thing is, it shouldn't have taken two to figure that out. But for sure, when a third opportunity arose, I realized, okay, I'm at the headwaters of bitterness because this is where my mind is going again. So that's just been a great litmus test for me.
Yeah. No, that's a powerful one, because I think anybody who has experienced a season of bitterness or bitterness towards a person or a situation, it's like, man, it's wild how your mind just drifts there. You know, it is wild how you'll be thinking about nothing and then all of a sudden that's what you're thinking about. You know, it's a pretty crazy experience. And you said a great thing this weekend. You said, if you're bitter, like something along, I'll butcher it, but something along the lines of like, the people in your life already know that you're bitter. Like nobody's surprised by that. And what I took from that, and what I think is I've seen be true both in other people's lives, which, like you said, that's my favorite place to observe, less my own life, but also in my own life, is when you're bitter, yeah, your mind is going to go there when there's nothing else to think about. But also you just keep bringing them up. Yeah. You just keep talking about them. Like,
they become the most important topic in your
conversation. Your life, right? Like, and people start to roll their eyes when you bring them up. Like,
here we go.
By the way, you can be bitter about a whole bunch of things, not even just a like interpersonal relationship, you can be bitter about politics, right? Mm-hmm. Like that is like something that just the same elicits the same reaction in people when it's like, oh, here they go again talking about whatever this policy they can't get over. So there's so many of those things that we can be bitter over. But yeah, your mind is going to drift there when there's nothing else there. And the people in your life know it though, because you just keep bringing it up. And it doesn't, when you think about it being on the outside looking in, it doesn't take long to figure out. Like the first time somebody that you're talking to brings it up, you're like, oh, okay. Like there's some fair points there. And I'm sure that was frustrating. And it's interesting to hear about kind of what you've been through. And then the second time you're like, oh, again. And by the third time you're like, okay, you can't get over this. Yeah. Like you're
not dealing well with this.
You are hung up on this. Yeah. Right. And so I think it's easy to just talk and not think too much about what we're talking about. But if you slow down for a second and you just think about how often I bring this up, because again, the reason I'm bringing it up is not generally just in a void. It's like you say something, but what is that litmus test again? Well, my mind just keeps going to the situation. Oh, when you said that, it made me think about, right? Like, and somehow everything goes back to them. Everything goes back to that situation.
Yeah, it had maybe nothing to do with it, but there's this one little piece that jogs that.
Oh, memory. It made me think about. And it's like, man, you really cannot get over this, you know? And if somebody starts looking at those litmus tests and they see, okay, I'm deep in, like I'm in some bitterness here. What steps have you taken to find freedom from bitterness? Yeah. Because that can be a really, though it eats us up inside and really eats at all of our relationships as well, it can still be such a hard addiction to kick because there's something that still feels like, I don't know that bitterness feels super satisfying as much as it feels like I'm in control a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like I wasn't in control of the fact that this thing hurt me or this situation was frustrating to me, but I am in control now of being just steaming hot, mad about it at the drop of a hat. And so it's hard to give up that illusion of control a little bit.
Yeah.
So how do you take steps to find freedom from
it? And I think even on that line, I think some people, I don't mean this like some people who are odd. I think for some personalities, especially being the victim actually is also very satisfying to those who are really justice people. Well, I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Like I'm pretty self-righteous. They're the scumbag. But then also just even that thing of I get attention maybe from that or we just relate. It's all, there's so many unique
kind of tangential benefits you can reap from.
So we come at it in different ways. So, you know, here we are, tangible takeaways, things that like what, and I'm thinking as we're talking, one thing that would have been really helpful on that line about other people and what they know. So we'll say it here today, back to like, if I'm having a hard time saying, well, am I really bitter about this? Maybe here's one great test besides if you can't maybe even rectify. Yeah, I guess I am thinking about it too much. Ask the people in your world. Is if you knowing me and knowing my conversations and knowing my way I approach life, is there anyone or anything that you would detect I'm bitter about? Hmm. Man, what a vulnerable question for sure. But if you really want to know if I need to deal with bitterness, guaranteed the people in your oikos could tell you if you are or if you aren't from at least their interactions. Because they would say, well, I know not to talk about or I know not to bring up. And then you're like, okay, I've got a problem.
And you're probably able to get even more specific than that because you probably have a person or a situation in mind that you're like, but I'm not bitter about that. It's just frustrating to me, but I'm not bitter. And then it's like, well, let's bring that up to your friends, that person, that situation, and say, do you think I'm bitter about so-and-so? Do you think I'm bitter about this thing? And they're going to be like,
no.
I'm glad you said something because, you are, you know?
And it would be hard for them to bring it up to you. But if you ask the question,
if you open the door,
a long way. I think for me, so let's go a little bit sequentially. First time that I really dealt with bitterness, I was wronged in a way that was very objective. What it wasn't even like, well, did they really? I mean, it's pretty objective what happened. And that took a long time to work through. And distance was a part of that help in a different state, literally, than where I was afterwards. And so it was helpful. But that's not the solution, by the way, just to have it like
just
change
move
states. You know,
that's the takeaway.
But it's somehow a salve. It helps in the process. And did reacted very poorly on my part with, I mean, truly the litmus test was developed during that time. Like, yeah, that's what that is. Second episode struggled as well. And I'm trying to remember if how I would nuance that from the second, not great. But the third real objective opportunity to go, I think I'm going to get bitter about this. What I realized is I've failed horribly these first two times. I don't want to do this again. Mm. And I just began thinking about, right, a lot of this is self-talk. I just began thinking about, there's that great passage, I think it's 2 Corinthians 10, take every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ. Mm. We've said this before. One of the biggest things we it's a lie that we believe is that we can't control what we think about. Mm. I don't think I can control glancing thoughts, but I can control what I dwell on. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was dwelling, right, on how I've been wronged in this situation. So what I did on this, and again, I wish I would have done it on the first. So I'm being like, didn't get it till the third opportunity. But in the third one, I just realized I need to take that passage very seriously. And I just wrote out a list of truth about this situation. And this one is a little bit more subjective, not super objective, yeah, but there were a more subjective reality. And I just wrote down, I need to remind myself. So it's back to taking every thought captive, rather than letting the self-talk go in all kinds of unhelpful, sinful directions. What is true about who I am? Hmm. I'm a child of God. What is true about this other person? Also loved by God. There's another believer. Hmm. What is true about my relationship to them in terms of, you know, where we stack up? This is truth. What is true about who I'm called to be in this season? This is true. Hmm. And I had seven statements that were truth. And I had a passage of scripture for every one of them. Hmm. So it wasn't even just like I could kind of fudge. It's like, nope, this is clearly what God's word says about this relationship. And I wrote all seven down. I put them on my iPad literally for the next 6 months. And I would have done it till however long I needed to. For the next 6 months, every day, I would read over those and pray over them. And that's what I believe God did to change my heart. Hmm. And I was really released from being bitter in that situation by just a daily intentional reminder. Because if I will fill my mind and my heart with truth, that changes my self-talk. Hmm. Versus it's just in the wild, wild west. Think about whatever I want and it's all fair game. That's going to get me nowhere. And that's always going to lead me to the flesh. So just replacing wild self-talk with biblically grounded truth was the game changer for me.
Yeah. Interesting. It sounds like that approach is changing what you're dwelling on, mm-hmm, right? Because that's what keeps you bitter. And that's also what heals you, is what you dwell on, mm-hmm, right? Because that's ultimately why bitterness is so effective in eating us alive, is because you just can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
And so it's saying, okay, well, if I can't stop thinking about it, then I need to replace what I'm thinking about with something that's different.
Yeah.
And not only different, but true, right? Yeah. Because what you've got to realize about bitterness is that though there are lots of seeds of truth in bitterness, especially in an objective situation, right? Like, mm-hmm, where it's like, this was just objectively wrong and not okay. Though there's a lot of seeds of truth, bitterness ultimately sprouts a lot of lies as well. Absolutely. Because when you are just in the echo chamber in your own head, it is really easy to just turn any situation into 100% your fault, mm-hmm, 0% mm-hmm, my fault.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, it's just so easy to get there in bitterness, which is just rarely ever true, right? Like, there are some true victim situations where it is 100% somebody else's fault and 0% yours, and you can still change what you dwell on. But most conflicts, most things that turn people bitter are not 100-0. And yet in our bitterness, we pretty quickly turn it into 100-0.
Yeah, we rewrite history.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so coming back to truth, saying I'm going to dwell on God's word, on what it says about me, but I loved what you said, also what it says about them. That's a powerful, because not only does bitterness over time change my view, make me more extreme on the situation, it also makes me more extreme on the person. Like, well, they're just all bad. they are a horrible person, scum of the earth, you know, like that's where we start to go. Horrible situation, completely not my fault. Horrible person, like we just start going total swing. And so coming back to, well, what does God's word say? Well, God's word is going to confront some of those things. Well, that's an image bearer of God, somebody more like God than anything else in all of creation. And so it's like, well, they can't just be scum of the earth. They're not that, you know? Yeah. And what's the situation? Well, man, maybe there were some ways that I contributed to the situation, that my pride or my selfishness contributed to the situation, though I'm deeply hurt by what they've done to me. And I'm not without fault.
And I would say, even if in that situation, it could be hard to see objective truth, even if I'm just blinded by anything I would have done, let's talk about another relationship where I have deeply hurt some.
Yeah,
it doesn't even have to be in that relationship. Yeah. There's plenty of examples of the ways I've wronged people.
Yeah.
So, and that's, again, in the bitterness echo chamber, those don't have any place in there. They don't make any entry into my life and in my mind. I'm just totally focused on how I've been wounded. And by the way, for some that are watching who would say that their greatest wounds, back to like who are they biblically, would be from people who don't have a relationship with God and they're just kind of acted out of the flesh. Every one of these significant wounds have been from other believers in my life. So my point is saying, don't assume that if I could just surround myself with Christians, that this won't happen.
Yeah.
We all still fail. And back to me, I have hurt people deeply.
Yeah.
And I love God and am loved by God, but that doesn't mean the fact that I don't hurt people and incur wounds in their lives. So just let's not live in that fairy tale world that because we're all Christians, we're not going to hurt each other.
Totally.
Every one of my experiences is with someone else who had a relationship with God.
Yeah. That opens up an interesting window into kind of the church hurt space. And I think that, that is the hope of Christian community, and even the promise of Christian community, is what opens ourselves up to be hurt so deeply by Christian community.
Expectations,
but also like just the level of vulnerability you bring to that community, different than you'd bring to any other kind of community or relationships in your life. And so you come expecting, man, we're all about the same things. We're going to be super open with each other because we're all chasing after looking more like Jesus. And so you come with kind of all of that, and especially when you do it the first time, very wide-eyed, excited, wow, this is going to be unlike anything else. And in so many ways, Christian community is unlike any other community that you're a part of. But you also open yourself up so much more deeply to be hurt, which means you most definitely will be hurt. And you'll probably be hurt more deeply in Christian community than you even allow yourself space to be hurt in other communities.
That's true.
And so that's the interesting thing with church hurt is, we need to stay soft-hearted. We need to keep opening ourselves up, but that is going to continue to create space for conflict, to create space for woundedness. And the beautiful thing is we've got this source of literally unending forgiveness that we can tap into, both for us and for the other person, for the situation. Mm-hmm. And so that's what fuels and empowers Christian community to stay together, is not that we never hurt each other.
Yeah.
It's that we all have the ability to tap into unlimited grace and forgiveness and continue to infuse that into our relationships. So that's a great point.
Yeah. And I think we need to get into this space. And this can be seen in all levels of relationship, from friendships to people in my growth group to my marriage, my kids, whatever. It varies, right? Because of the level of depth. But we just need to get in this space where, to your point, we stop dreaming of relationships without conflict or without wounding. Mm. And what we need to start dreaming of, how do we get reconciled?
Yeah, restorative relationships.
Because the other's a fantasy that will only be completed in heaven.
Yeah.
Where there is no sin, and it's not just because they aren't going to sin, it's because I'm not going to sin. It goes all directions. Praise God, I'm not going to bring that nature into that space. But on this side of that, I just need to start getting real about my expectations, and I need to get over the fantasy of how can I just have this great conflict-free relationship? They don't exist. Mm. And the sooner I'll come to terms with that, number one, I'll have appropriate expectations about others in my life. But number two, I think it begins to sow the seed, even in a brand new friendship. Let's say I'm in a rooted group with someone this fall and we're getting to know each other. We kind of click, or maybe we're two couples, or we're in a mixed group and me and this other person, like, I think there's a friendship there. If I can know going in, but I'm probably at some point going to offend them. At some point, they might hurt me.
They're going to let me down.
Yeah. That's okay, though. Because back to what you said, we live in this vast reservoir of mercy and grace that we've received. Mm-hmm. And we're called to dispense that to others as well. And so let's think already at the very beginning, this relationship's probably going to need reconciliation.
Yeah.
It's okay. Everyone does. And let's prepare for that even in advance, at least expectations wise.
Yeah, not in some like pessimistic way, yeah, but like, of like everybody sucks, but yeah, also to come in and say, you know what? Like there will be hurts, but I, knowing that, am still bringing my full self to the relationship. Yeah. I'm still opening myself up, knowing that I'll be hurt. And Lord, I'm surrendering that to you, trusting that you're going to empower me to forgive and to be forgiven in ways that will be needed in this relationship, just like they are in all of our relationships here, yeah, on earth.
Amen.
And in that, you know, ability to reconcile, you highlighted an importance of confrontation this weekend as well, and a real avoidance that we all have towards confrontation, which I resonated with deeply. I find, though, that confrontation is one of the areas I get in my head the most, and I feel like I can't see the forest for the trees in the do confront, don't confront kind of a thing. Mm. Because there's, if I started, like, let's just play out the hypothetical, right? If I started confronting everybody for everything that ever rubbed me the wrong way, like, people are just gonna hate being around me. Mm. And also, like, I'm gonna hate my life, right? Like, that's not a good way to live.
Sure.
And not everything hits that threshold of being deserving of confrontation. I am guilty of not really thinking anything hits the threshold of needing confrontation. Like,
it's almost like it's got to be seismic,
yeah,
for it to, like, I've got to.
Exactly. Because I just keep going, well, I can deal with that myself. Sure. Like, I can deal with that on my own. I don't need to bring that up. And so it's really hard to find that sweet spot of knowing where's the line? Where is it when it's like, hey, that needs to be confronted, where I'm not being overly punitive with it, where it's everything, because then we start to get a little bit into that, you know, road rage situation. What the heck are you thinking? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what? I'm never even going to know who that person is who cut me off. Unless, of course, they have an HDC sticker on. Then we could have,
maybe I'll probably see them on Sunday.
Maybe we could have a conversation then. But otherwise, right, I'm never going to know who that person is. And so, Father, can you help me forgive them and extend grace? I've cut people off. You know, like, I know I need to deal with that vertically. But I guess I'm, you know, when thinking about confrontation, thinking about it through Jackson's lens, I'm just realizing I kind of have a hard time seeing it clearly, when to confront, when not to confront. And so how do you navigate that, knowing if this is a situation that's like, oh yeah, we need to confront here, or it's a situation that's like, you know what, I need to work that out, me and the Lord. Because yeah, I would even imagine, I don't know necessarily the specifics of the three instances of bitterness that you're talking about, but I would imagine that maybe all of those or some of those ended and went away without some major confrontation between you and that person, because they had gone on so much longer. Yeah. And so some of those are situations it's like, wow, Lord, I've really turned this into like a me problem. And so you and I need to work this out more than we need to work this out. And so totally, I'm going to deal with it here. So I guess it's, how do I know when it's, okay, I need to work this out with the Lord versus, oh no, I do need to bring this up with this person.
Yeah, no, it's a really great practical question. From my vantage point, this is how I would say it. Number one, we've got to get past the word confrontation being a dirty word and a word that's filled with rage and filled with, I'm gonna tell you. We need to get back to, and this is what I had shared about what got pounded into me in college, was the best way to live in community with other believers is an ongoing interchange of loving confrontation. Hmm. That is, and here's the goal, that Matthew 18, earlier in the chapter, I just read that one verse. If someone sins against you, go to that brother, just you, one on, you know, that, or the sister.
Yeah.
Well, if you keep reading through, it gives us really laid out, this is how you do this. But what is the end of even, I didn't go further. What does the end of that first verse say? And if they, you know, basically repent, you've won your brother over.
Yeah.
Now, not necessarily over to your side, like I win, but like we're reconciled. Hmm. The goal always is reconciliation, not I got that piece of flesh.
Not winning. Yeah.
Not winning. Like I told you, I told him off. That's never the goal. The goal is, this is, I think, a better way to, that I just say it in my relationships, how do we get right?
Yeah.
We're not right, right now.
Or the, oh, I just had to get that off my chest. Yeah, it's, I hear that all the time. Yeah, that's not what it is.
Yeah, we were at, I think, at a conference a year ago, and a lady got up and just shared, there's no psychological value to venting. Mm. Like, we've all kind of become, believe, like, I just feel better.
Yeah.
No, at the end of the day, you'll replay that all over. I wish I would have said, and they didn't say this back. Venting doesn't have the value we think it does.
It's actually enhancing your bitterness.
Yeah. Yeah. So instead, if I will say, so asking the question, when to confront, when not. I agree. I don't think everything needs that conversation, but we've got to get away from, well, when they drop the atomic bomb, that's when I'll move towards them. And the reality is, there were so many things leading up to that.
Yeah.
If I would have gone in love with the goal of being reconciled, we probably could have avoided the bomb, and we could have just kept doing, because I think Matthew 18 things should be going on daily. Where I think most of us go, oh, when the big one comes, okay, I'll muster up the strength. Okay, when that, sometimes those do come out of the blue. You got a deal, but we got to stop thinking that's just reserved for really heavy things versus I've got to deal with that. And here's the other part that was helpful to me. So a little, this is now Todd's therapy, like not giving you therapy, but this is my therapy session. As I was working through, it was fascinating, right? It came up at teaching team yesterday. It was one of the reasons I can talk maybe with a little more passion and a little more confidence about this topic was a season of challenge that I went through when I was in Redlands. And I said, absolutely. I've learned a lot through that, and maybe not just through the experience, but through my therapy working with that. And, you know, one of the questions that I asked my therapist was, as we were working through some stuff, he said, Todd, I think part of the problem is that you're entering into a situation of conflict, you know, whatever. Maybe there does need to be the exchange of forgiveness, but you just want to move quickly through it and move forward. Like, it's always what's next, just moving forward. And I had to admit, you're right. I do that. That's a very real pattern in my life. But I asked the question, which I think is a fair question for anyone to ask, what's the value of sitting in it?
Yeah.
Like, is that good? Like, just, I'm hurt and frustrated and got this, I'm just going to sit. He's like, no, I'm not trying to say that. But he did say, and then he used this analogy. It's been very helpful to me since. So when you're driving your car and you have one of these lights come on the dash, I grew up in a home, we called them idiot lights. I don't think that's the best phrase, but it is like, there's a problem.
Yeah.
And if you just keep driving as all things are fine, you're going to incur a bigger problem because that light is there to warn you there's a problem needs to be addressed. Mm. And sometimes it's somewhat minor, sometimes it's somewhat major, but that's not the light's job, is to even clarify what needs to be done. It's to clarify there's a problem that needs to be addressed. Mm. And he's like, that's what I would encourage you to do when those lights are coming up on the dash. And as he and I were talking, I realized there were plenty of lights that were coming up on the dash during all kinds of seasons of my life, but especially that season in the pandemic, that I was ignoring those lights, hoping they'd go away. Hmm. And partly because, same question, does that deserve that kind of conversation?
Yeah.
And other times just wishing it would get better.
Yeah.
Those conversations didn't happen and it only got worse. Hmm. So then, as a practical reality, coming to HDC, there was a situation that came up in the first 3 months of being here that I just realized I'm having a warning light about a relationship. and I want to learn. I don't want to just keep repeating the same mistakes. I want to learn. And so I just went to this person and I said, hey, I'm not here to, like, I'm not angry. I'm not, you haven't wounded me. I just have this warning light about the interactions that we have. Could I ask you, is there something that I've done, or is there some awkwardness in our relationship? And I'll tell you, I was so appreciative. That person opened up in honesty, said, no, there is some awkwardness. And I'm like, I'd love to hear what that is, so we can talk why, so we can be right.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, that was one of the most satisfying conversations, not only because I felt like we were able to make progress towards what needed to happen, but also because it's like, it works.
Yeah.
If I would do this when, and to be fair, like, especially as men, sometimes we're just not as sensitive to what needs to be addressed. And that's personality based as well. So I don't, you know, this takes filtering, right? But
yeah.
But I do think that that's a new now reality for me. When warning lights are going on, I'm not going to ignore them. And I'm not going to come in guns blazing. You did this. It wasn't even that. It was, I just feel like there's something not right. And what is the goal? I want to be right with you. Another thing real quick on that came up in teaching team, but I forgot to mention this week. I think it was Landon who said it. It takes one person to forgive. It takes two people to be reconciled. And that's really true, because in the middle of all this, even if I will do everything God calls me to do, it doesn't mean that person will want to be reconciled to me. And so I always have to be aware of that. That is a reality that could happen. It doesn't negate that I don't try. I'm still called to do what I'm called. But, like, I love that. No matter if you're the offender or the offended, go to that other person.
Jesus instructs both.
Yeah, maybe you should meet in the middle of the road. But if the other person isn't doing that, you got to go all the way to them. And if it doesn't, if they're not interested in being reconciled, again, number one, if I'm offended, I'm still called to forgive. That is not contingent on reconciliation. But number two, the goal of being right, that may still be lost in that season until they're ready to face that.
Yeah, no, that's... I love the example of warning light indicators, because we've all, either through personal experience or heard stories of, you know, this guy's sister just had a warning light going off for coolant in her car, just kept going, blew a gasket, blew up the whole engine, you know, has got all these problems now. And what was going to be, you know, $50, $60 is now, you know, thousands of dollars in damage to fix. And it is interesting with confrontation. The cost really does go up. The longer that you let it go, the deeper the wounds are. Because now we have to get to, when we first talk, I think when that indicator comes up initially, we can get really clearly out of the way the assumptions that we've made about the situation and talk about the real situation, right? Because I can come in and say, hey, I'm hurt because I think you are intending to do this to me or whatever. And it's like, oh man, I never intended that. And I'm so sorry that that's hurt you. We got all the kind of assumptions about intention out of the way and got to the heart of the issue really quickly. There's so many layers of assumptions. How do they keep not thinking about us not being right? How are they so unaware? They really don't care about me. Mm-hmm. Like, you just pile on all these motivation, assumptions.
Like, I know what they're thinking. Yeah. I know why they're doing this.
And I know why they don't care about getting right with me. Like, if they would come to me, you know, and all of this. Meanwhile, probably most of the time, they're just kind of skipping along their way. They have no idea, right? Like, it's not this, like, they're a supervillain. But the longer that we leave that warning light on, the more they become a supervillain to us. And so we have to work through a ton of suspicion, a ton of assumptions that are really unfair and more my fault than yours as the person who hurt me. Because I've just been stewing in my bitterness in my echo chamber, and I'm adding false assumption on false assumption on false assumption. And so when you deal with that quickly, you can say, like, great example in that situation, hey, I'm sensing something's off. Here's my assumption about maybe why that is. I could be wrong. Could you help me understand if you think things are off? And if so, why you think things are off? What's your assumption about me? And now really quickly, we're getting our initial assumptions on the table and kind of scooting them to the side. And now we're dealing with the heart of the issue. that's so much easier to do than when you have a mountain of assumptions. Yeah. And when you have a mountain of assumptions, that's what leads to the, I just got to get this all off my chest. Ooh. You're a terrible person. And yeah. I've come to lots of, those assumptions have turned into conclusions.
Yeah.
And now I've got to say something. Well, the reason that that confrontation's not going to go well isn't the other person's fault.
Yeah.
It's, you have been stewing on this for so long, allowing assumptions to pile and become really conclusions about a person. And that's when you're at a point that's like, I can't see this clearly. And so I'm not going to come in and find value in this conversation because I've let the warning lights go on too long.
Yeah. Yeah. A deep amount of damage is done that really has just kind of been back to self-talk concocted in my head.
Yeah.
And really has just made me so much, the mountain, like you said, has grown so much more. It was a small hill initially.
Yeah.
Now it's just like a, and that will come off, like we've said, just as you venting. Not yeah. like, again, how do we get right? It's, I got to unload.
Yeah. Is there a way that you found helpful as we kind of wrap this up, setting up a confrontation moment of like, with the goal of, hey, I want to get right with you. That's the goal. Is there a way you found helpful to kind of set up those conversations that you found them to be more productive?
Yeah. When I just go back to the Matthew 18 idea, it's obviously one-on-one.
Yeah.
So it's just trying to find time to have a space. It doesn't have to be in a private, it could be at a coffee shop, it could be at a restaurant. I would suggest, by the way, just real quick, don't do it over a meal, because if things go sideways, you got this really weird, coffee's good.
Yeah.
Up and go if you yeah. need to, but have a space that's at least private enough to have a real conversation. And be intentional and lay it out at the very beginning. I think a lot of times, again, out of just fear and awkwardness, I'm just going to give you a little bit of the problem and not share what the real issue is. And then it's like a fishing game. I don't even know, what are you mad about? What did I do? Versus, hey, and like even the example I gave, this person hadn't done anything wrong.
Yeah.
But it was like, I know there's an awkwardness though. There's something not right. Am I missing something? Like, am I just overreading it? Like, am I just being like very overly, you know, aware of something that's not even there? Like giving them the opportunity to say, yeah, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And then I can say, I'm so sorry. And thank you for at least letting me share what I was, you know, sensing or feeling. And then if there is, you've been vulnerable, right? To say, hey, I just sense there's something, or when it's real objective, hey, you did this.
Yeah.
We don't have to talk about how I feel per se. It's like it happened. But in doing it, to say, and here's my goal, I want to be right with you. And I just think if that's our ongoing, that is so much more enabling to have a real conversation versus blah.
Yeah.
And then you're like, what do you even want me to do with that? What is the goal? My goal is I want to be right with you, but I just can't be without this being kind of dealt with, you
yeah.
know? And again, I think that goes both ways. I know I've hurt you. I'm coming to you. I want to be right with you. I am so sorry. Could you forgive me?
Yeah.
It can go both directions. But I just think, again, if the other person is hearing, I'm not just trying to back up the truck and dump it on you. I'm really trying to be reconciled, be made right.
Yeah.
So that's my heartbeat. Can we have that conversation?
Yeah, I'm not here vindictively to get my pound of flesh. Mm-hmm. And that's such a huge thing in setting up the conversation well. And then realizing I can say the same exact thing two different ways, and the trajectory of the conversation and their response, really, I am accountable for in yeah. many ways, because I can say, you did this to me. You weren't thinking. And I can give all of my assumptions in an accusatory way, or I could say, this is confusing to me because it's out of character for you. And it has made me feel like maybe you don't care about me, or you don't pay attention to me, or whatever. Now you can list out your assumptions still. Mm. These are all the things I'm assuming, but we're not you did this to me, and saying them all as conclusions. We're just listing out the assumptions as questions. It's made me think these things, and that sits really weird with me because I know you and I know us, and that's not right. And so here's kind of all the things I'm assuming. And as you lay those out gently, that's the work of building bridges. When you start going like this, well, you're throwing grenades. And when you throw grenades, what do people do? They get behind walls. So when you find that in a conversation, maybe it's because you're chucking grenades. When you're like, why won't they just open up and we could just talk and get right? Well, because you're just chucking grenades at them. Nobody opens up to that, right? The moment that you open up the conversation with, I'm here to get right with you. I want to build a bridge. And here's, let me just give you what I saw. This thing hurt me. And it got me thinking about all these other things and thinking maybe these things are true. But I also feel like they shouldn't be because I know you. And so can you help me understand that? It's like, oh man, I totally see. It opens the other person up to say, I totally see how you could get there.
Yeah.
Like how you would fill in those gaps.
I didn't think of that.
But from your vantage point, I can totally see that. Mm-hmm. Here's what I was thinking. And I'm so sorry that it inflicted that kind of hurt for you. But I definitely was not blank, blank, and blank, you know, because the assumptions are just almost never true. And it makes sense in the void of information that you fill in all the assumptions, but you can't change your assumptions unless you go get more information.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can become better bridge builders and less grenade throwers.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for the time and a great message this weekend.
Yeah. It's again, something that I am grateful for, that God's done a work in me. But I also was praying about on the way in today, there'll be more opportunities to ask for forgiveness, more opportunities to forgive. So it's like an ongoing
growth. It's not only past tense.
And I'm grateful for where I've come, what God's done, but I know it'll need to be applied again.
Yeah. So. Well, it's a huge benefit to me and to our church because bitterness is such a place that we can so easily become stuck in our following after Christ that we find our discipleship to him kind of hindered because we just cannot get past this person or this situation. So what a benefit in our pursuit after Christ to find freedom in forgiveness. So thank you for the time.
Got it.
Hope it's been a helpful episode for you here on Tangible Takeaways. As always, don't forget to like the video and subscribe so that you get future videos as well. And maybe leave a comment here as well of maybe something you're taking away from this weekend's message. That's all we have for this week of Tangible Takeaways. We won't be on next week because almost everybody's at camp. So we've got lots of summer camp stuff going on next week, but we'll be back the week after. So we'll catch you guys then. See you guys.